Good morning. 17 minutes, 6 seconds on the first mile. That's with two photos this morning, so that's not bad. It's sub-17 when you count all the stops. So yeah, well, let's see, 9:54 a.m. on April the 10th, 2014. Yeah, 9:54, not 7:54. I got home from taking a kid to school this morning and was looking at my phone thinking, oh, I should go for my walk before I take my shoes off and get settled in. What I realized was my phone was almost dead, and I wasn't sure it would make the whole trip. So I took an hour or so and let it charge, corrected a few wrong things on the internet. It's really astonishing how much time correcting the internet can take. It really is. It's mind-boggling. It doesn't seem to matter how often I do it. I go back the next time and there's something else that's wrong. So, yeah. It's a wonder I get anything done at all. So, today's theme is regular posting. That's the bonus picture today. It was regular posting. It's one of the more picturesque fence constructions in the neighborhood with whitewashed posts and whitewashed rails. It is, strictly speaking, a post and rail, although it's not the post and rail that we think of with the holes that the posts have sharpened ends that go into, which is a more common construction post and rail. This post and rail is decorative only. You can probably tell because the rails are on the wrong side of the pasture. There's actually a barbed wire fence that runs along the inside. That is a pasture on the other side of the driveway there. It's on the other side of the fence. It's where the horses live during the summer. Some horses, not all the horses, obviously, but they have a few horses that pasture there. Generally in the spring, they put the mares in there to foal. It's close to the house. It's handy to the barn. I don't know where they keep them the rest of the year. But it's a fun place. But, yeah, you don't put the poles on the outside. You put the poles, not the poles. You do put the poles on the outside. You put the rails on the inside. So when the large animals lean against them, they push the rails against the poles, against the posts, not away from them. So your small lesson of fence building today: posts. And it's exactly opposite of what you might think. It's actually, inside and outside is a bit problematic, because if you think of your backyard fence, we have stockade fencing around our backyard. All of the fence posts and mounting rails, the rails that the stockade fencing connects to, those are on the inside, which would make what I just said sound awkward, except that it's so that if people are on the outside pushing against the fence, they don't push the fence in, they push it against the fence poles. It's where are you trying to keep your perimeter, and in what direction does the force come from? If I didn't say from before. Anyway, regular posting. It's one of the many I won't call them canards, because there's a certain set of canards about marketing in general, but regular posting is one of those kinds of things that are like, probably won't hurt you. I think the jury is still out on whether or not it will help you, in large part because it depends a great deal on what your goal for your blog, and that's really the only place where posting matters. Is whether your blog is, or what the intent of your blog, what the purpose of your blog is. For fiction writers, it's largely irrelevant because, you know, a post now and again, I try to put a post up once a month. I get more posts on NathanLowell.com than I do on either Llamas Wood or Solar Clipper these days, just because I'm kind of lazy, I guess. One of the canards is that you need reviews on your books. That's one of the things that I was talking about with a couple of people this morning. It's the value of reviews for getting sales. And for people who are just starting out and they have no reviews and they get no sales, they think they're getting no sales because they have no reviews. And it's actually the converse. They have no reviews because they've had no sales. And that's the problem. There's a causal relationship, and most new authors assume that the causation runs from, I have reviews, so I will get more sales. And the reality is exactly reversed. I get more sales, therefore I will have more reviews. And the averages are pretty consistent, I have to say. It's if you're doing better than one review per 200 sales, you're doing really, really well. Most people that I know of, and that includes some of the big hitters, are averaging about one review per every 200 sales. Now, I've done a little bit better than that with Ownershare, in large part, I think, because it aggravated so many people. And that aggravation spurred them to take action, which was to complain about the book or to support the book. And once they see how many people are like, oh, this sucked. So yeah, it's one of the misconceptions, and the misconception is fostered by sites like BookBub that require you to have 10 reviews and an average rating of, I forget what it is, like 4 stars or something, before they'll run a BookBub ad on you. BookBub ad on you. And that's because it's their way of saying, okay, you know, everybody and his brother would publish a book and put out a BookBub if they could. So what we want to do is pick only those people who've had some modicum of success already, is we want 10 reviews so that we can get an average that says, all right, this is better than 80% of the books on Amazon. Now, I think the reality of that is that there's way more 5-star reviews on Amazon if you take all the books and add up all the star totals. I suspect there are a great deal more 5-star reviews than there are 1-star reviews. That's just the nature of people. If the book is really bad, they won't finish it. If they don't finish it, they won't leave a review. I think that's true. I think that's the nature of the beast. I don't have any data to support that. It's strictly an opinion. But I think examining it from an operational standpoint, I think that's probably what's happening. And then you have the gang people. Like, I think it's Anthony Ryan who wrote Blood of the Raven or something like that. It's famous. At least among writers. I don't know if he's famous among readers, but he's famous among writers for A, for a large number of sock puppets, and B, for having a half a dozen or so, maybe a dozen, people in his gang who will attack anyone who leaves a negative review. This is pretty common. It was something that Hugh Howey did in the beginning. He's real careful about it now, but in the beginning it was pretty common. and almost to a certain extent comical for people who didn't like wool to leave a lukewarm or even unfavorable review and then be attacked. And if it was another author, then that author would find that their own books... Oh, look at that. Monk Post. Yes, Monk Post. Thank you, Harlan Smith. That author would suddenly find himself inundated with the reviews, both on Goodreads and on Amazon, that were one star, two star. Many times not verified purchases, just drive-bys. I get a fair amount of drive. I get a fair number of drive-bys. I have to confess. If you go down through and look at the people who review my books, and you look at the one-star reviews, most of the people who leave one-star reviews, not all, but many, it's the first and only book they've ever reviewed. Never reviewed another book anywhere, everywhere, nothing. And the other one you get a lot is, I'm only going to review a book if I hate it because I think I need to warn the public against trash. It's a moral duty. And they approach it as such, as a moral duty. My favorite review was of Half Share. This guy left a one-star review of Half Share because he didn't like the ending of the series. I think it was Michael Sullivan who actually commented on that. He said, seriously? You're leaving a bad review on this book because you don't like how the author ended the series 4 books from now. And he did, yeah. That was his whole review. That was the whole thing. It was like, nah, series sucks. Stop here. It's fair cop. I can't really complain about that kind. He's like, no, stop here. Yeah, stop at Captain Share. That's probably not a bad place to stop. Just don't read anything else I ever write. That's the only caveat. As much as I don't plan, and I really don't plan, I had no idea where Odor Share was going to end. Other than I knew I wasn't going to end with Ishmael in that series. And I did not want to end with Ishmael and the Kaylee clone. That was a bit too much. That was a bit over the top. And this was not a character I wanted to keep around. Not a character I wanted to see Ishmael working with. I have a much better character in mind for him. I think people are going to be pleased with the way that this is going. I hope they're going to be pleased. Jeez, I hope they're going to be pleased. But I'm much more... I like this sort of hypothetical arc because it's really all I've got right at this point. It's like, well, I think I need to go this way. But particularly for people who are long-lived, for people who have an extra 50, 60 years, a lot of what I'm doing now, particularly with Ishmael and his character development, his emotional and psychological development, has to do with the fact that he's really got, he's not a 20th century or an 18th century man where he has maybe 40 years or maybe 70 years in his lifetime. He has double that. He's got 140 years in his lifetime. And he's just turned 40, so he's barely a third. He's sort of like in his 20s. And he's already had one divorce. He's already had a significant major loss. And yet most of his life, the majority of his life, the bulk of his life, the most productive years of his life are still ahead of him. And so how he participates in that, particularly where I set the stage early on where there are no old spacers. Now people don't stay in space forever. They eventually do something else. And so Ishmael is going to go off and do something else. And he's always going to be in space. But what he does in space is going to change from place to place, from series to series, over time. Because this idea that you have one job for your whole life, that hasn't been true since when I was a kid. My father didn't have this whole job, and yet he subscribed to the notion that he would have one job and he would be loyal to the company and the company would take care of him and all would be world peace. And the reality of that was, even for him, a man born in 1931, somewhere around there, the early 30s, 1930s, not the 2030s, but 1930s. It wasn't true then, and yet he believed that it was true in his later years. It sandbagged him. Now, I never believed it was true. I always thought that was stupidly boring. The idea that I was going to have one job and do it for my entire adult life always struck me as being, you can't be kidding. You can't be serious. This has got to be some sort of cosmic joke. Because A, nobody I know does it now. It might have been true before when you grew up on the family farm, when you inherited the farm, where you farmed the same patch of land that your grandfather farmed. I mean, yeah, okay, then. The 1800s, maybe. From the earliest days of the 20th century, mobility, the automobile, the airplane, the factors of mobility and communication have changed so radically. This whole idea of one job for life is boring. Like, I have other things I wanted to do, and God knows I've done a few of them. I haven't done them all, but geez, I couldn't do them all. I never play PGA golf. I'll never play pro basketball. And the reality is neither of those two things that I want to do. I'm probably never going to act in a movie, although that has a certain appeal to it. I've been on the stage, not as a professional, but I was on the stage as a kid. That was fun. My daughter comes by her proclivities naturally. Hoping she doesn't inherit all of my proclivities, because that would be a little scary, but yeah. Anyway, let's see. What else? So yeah, where we're going with Ishmael is someplace else. I want to explore the rest of the Golden Age in the Western Annex. And we haven't been to the Core Worlds. We've only talked about the Western Annex. We've not talked about the Core Worlds. We have not talked about the worlds that were settled in the first expansion, where the Core Worlds have been developed not for 250 years, not for 200 years, not for 300 years, but for 500 years. The most they can be developed is 200 years. But they're the closest worlds. There are more CPJCT-controlled worlds there. Fewer corporate-owned worlds. Corporate-leased worlds. That's the other thing, is that they're all leased. And as such, there's probably a higher... I'm anticipating a higher density of population. It's closer to Earth, psychologically as well as physically. It takes less time to get home. For those people in the beginning where home actually meant someplace special instead of where I happen to be standing.
2.0 miles. Oh. 35 minutes 25 seconds. Lap pace,
18 minutes 19 seconds
per mile.
Oh, I'm just poking along here, this second half. Pokey poke, pokey poke. So yeah, yesterday was a good day in terms of editing. It was a crappy day in terms of podcast. I got home and there was like the file was trash. It was horrible. I looked at it and I tried to run through my normal filters when I got done. I looked at it. It was like, seriously, what the hell is this? And I listened to it and realized, oh, shoot. It was crap. Crap, crap, crap. Crappity crap, crap. So yeah, yesterday was a blue day. I did walk, but I didn't manage to get a file out of it. I'm hoping today is better because I did double check the plug. Its phone is in my pocket, so I haven't tugged on it at all. But I am at the back gate. And as my habit at the back gate, it's time for me to say tomorrow is another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.